Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, Bluegrass, American Roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
Before. It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X.
Poetry in motion. Turn a tender eyes to me. Steamers in the ocean. Sweeter than any harmony. But she blinded me with silence. She blinded me with silence.
Good morning. And welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every week, live from 11 till 12. We're based on Paternoster Row in the workstation, if you know where that is in Sheffield. All good stuff. Got Julian Paul here live as usual. There's no PG. This week he's feeling still a little bit under the weather, but we've got a guest phone in this week. He's back! He's back after his summer recess. My word, he needed
Where's the rest.
I know. It's Dr. Ogo Osamo. He'll be talking about a new study into Alzheimer's and air pollution. All good stuff. Next week, and indeed every third Saturday of the month, we'll be talking to Gareth Morgan, who's a member of and also ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society. And on that note, don't forget, there's a free exhibition in Sheffield Winter Garden until 3 p.m. tomorrow, so go and check it out before it finishes. It's the Sheffield Photographic Society's Perspectives Exhibition 2024. We went on Wednesday, brilliant. More photos than probably in the previous years and a great range of stuff. There was loads of people there viewing the photos. There's some fantastic old photos as well of Sheffield in black and white. They're superb. Well worth checking out and also well worth following Sheffield Photographic Society. They're on Facebook. You can find them on there or you can go to www.sheffieldphotosociety.org.uk. Next up, firstly, Weather Eye. This is an article about gottafria, which means cold drop.
Spelled G-O-T-A-F-R-I-A, or cold drop. It's all about the recent floods in Valencia, southeast Spain, have left at least 200 people dead, with that numbers expected to rise as rescue efforts continue, although the ferocity of the disaster means the total number of fatalities may never be known. The rain crashed down so fast that torrents of water and mud suddenly rushed at great speed through streets, swept away cars and crashed through buildings. A weather station in Chiva, C-H-I-V-A, recorded nearly 500 millimetres of rain in 8 hours, almost a year's worth of rain. We're saying that the reason why it happened so quickly was the land was so dry, and that's why it had quite a devastating effect on the area. The storm began when the jet stream became so convoluted that it split off into a small circulation of its own called a cut-off low. That led to a very cold pool of air high up over Iberia, contrasting with very warm, humid air towards the ground. That prompted a rapid rise in the warm, moist air that fueled severe thunderstorms, lightning, hail, and heavy downpours of rain. The cut-off low was boxed in by a huge area of high pressure over Europe, which meant that it became almost stationary. This gave plenty of time for the rains to crash down. This type of phenomenon has happened before. On October 14th, 1957, another huge flood in Valencia left at least 81 people dead. But what made last week's disaster worse was the suddenness and the extraordinary deluge of rain, driven in part by the warmth of the Mediterranean Sea, which reached its warmest surface water temperature on record with 28.5°C in mid-August. Other parts of Europe have also been hit by flooding disasters this year, most recently in mid-September when a large region in central Europe experienced a slow-moving storm with very high rainfall, breaking local and national rainfall records. These blocked slow-moving storms appear to be becoming more frequent in Europe and are projected to increase further with additional warming, explained Dr. Carola Coining at Brunel University London. So that is a gotta fria, or cold drop.
It's not good stuff, though, is it? No. If you've just tuned in, of course, listen to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM every Saturday morning, talking about science in all its different forms. And talking of water, I saw something very interesting about water butts. I'm sure there's a joke in there somewhere. Capture and recycle rainwater. The more you collect, the merrier your garden will be. The challenges of climate change are making water ever more of an issue, not only for gardeners, but for us as human beings as well. In the UK, we tend to get most of our rainfall during winter, so capturing it over the coming months is the best way to help in dry spells next summer. You can collect an incredible 24,000 litres of water from the roof of an average-sized house, even in a dry part of the country, and that's equivalent to 120 water butts. Fit water butts to downpipes and gutters to make the most of this free water source. Now, top tips: raise and cover. Lifting up the water butt on a stand or a firm brick base allows you to get a watering can under the tap. Cover the butt with a lid to help keep out debris and stop wildlife from falling in. And do visit the Royal Horticultural Society's got a website as well, Mains to Rains website, to record your sustainable water practices. All good stuff. The Royal Horticultural Society are really up in their game in terms of sustainability, because really, quite frankly, they should be leading the way for us all. Get linking, they say. Link together multiple water butts to increase the capacity you can store. In a narrow space such as a side return, you might want to link several slim water butts rather than fitting one large one. Check for outflow holes when purchasing them. All interesting. Make it pretty. Water butts come in all shapes and sizes, and some even come camouflaged as garden ornaments or pots, or with planting pockets incorporated. This doubles up their usefulness and makes them easier to integrate and look better in your space. So all good stuff, good advice. Choosing durable, recycled or recyclable materials for your system is better for the environment. And you can get various water butts in all sorts of styles and colours from various places. So check them out when you're next out and about. Use diverters is the other tip. Diverters stop water butts overflowing, which is key if they're next to your house. Most water butts come with a downpipe diverter kit, or you can buy one separately, and they're easy to fit on plastic downpipes. Some council websites offer discounts on rainwater harvesting kits. And don't forget that every downpipe is an opportunity. Add a water butt to every downpipe you can. Even a small shed can collect 2,700 litres of water. That's 13 water butts over a year.
Wow.
And butts by greenhouses are really useful as the water is close to where you need it. So recapture water. Rain by Status Quo. What a track. And we played that. We're talking about water butts. Really good for your garden. Get capturing and recycling your water. And then we're also talking about Valencia, floods in Valencia, the Gota Fria or cold drop. If you've just tuned in, of course, you listen to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Next up, a bit of an environment update, of course. We've had COP16, which is the United Nations Biodiversity Conference. That's finished at the beginning of November. Many issues were made outstanding, including finance for preserving biodiversity across the globe and importantly, the strengthening up of national plans for protecting nature. COP29, the United Nations Climate Conference, is due to start in Azerbaijan on Monday, in fact.
Wow.
Very interesting. It's already controversial for lots of reasons we won't go into. Discussions about increasing the ambition to tackle global climate change will be a major theme when world leaders gather there over the next few weeks. Interesting stuff. Also coming up will be our Earth Week. We're waiting for some more information about that. We might talk about that next week. So, first up on a general environment update, hydrogen energy. This is a really interesting one. The government has signed off £2 billion for the first 11 commercial green hydrogen schemes in Britain. Hydrogen has long been the holy grail of energy, clean green energy, which when burnt produces only water as a byproduct. Now, listen to this then. There's three different types of hydrogen. Virtually all hydrogen in the UK is made using the grey method at the minute, but ministers, as we said, are aiming to have blue and green hydrogen up and running, and that investment I've just talked about is for the green, commercial green hydrogen scheme. So what's the difference then? Grey hydrogen, natural gas, or in some cases coal, is heated until it splits into hydrogen and carbon. Blue hydrogen uses the same process, but captures the carbon dioxide and stores it underground so it does not emit greenhouse gases. Now, green hydrogen, which is what we're after, uses renewable energy to power electrolyzers, devices that run electricity through water to split it into hydrogen and oxygen. And the reason hydrogen is clean and green, burning hydrogen with oxygen is a very clean reaction. Water is the only byproduct. And talking of which, it's more about water. It's all about water today.
Yes, water quality. Thousands of people gathered in London last Sunday to urge the government to take immediate action on pollution in Britain's rivers. Representatives of more than 100 environmental and other affected groups gathered in Parliament Square alongside some celebrities.
I think Chris Packham was there amongst others, yes. And Nature Recovery, the Wildlife Trust, has bought a 3,800 hectare portion of the Rothbury Estate in Northumberland as part of an expansive plan for Nature Recovery. The estate, which has been used for intensive sheep farming and grouse shooting, is owned by the Duke of Northumberland's youngest son, Lord Max Percy.
And we know that
surname. We've been up there, yeah. It's a very interesting place up there. And it's been in the family for about 700 years. Now, the Wildlife Trust is now looking to raise £30 million over the next 2 years to purchase the entire Rothbury estate.
Ooh.
Next one's a very interesting
right,
story as well.
I've never heard this term.
Well, you will now.
Cloud milking. That's cloud milking. So you think, cloud milking? This is a technique to replenish forests using moisture drawn from clouds of fog, is being used successfully in the Canary Islands. A series of devastating wildfires in 2007 and 2009 destroyed thousands of acres of forest, leaving scientists searching for zero carbon ways to collect water and aid reforestation efforts. They settled on large mesh structures that capture clouds of fog that hang over the region. With moisture condensing on small metal fronds, the process known as cloud milking is now being used in other parts of the world to supply drinking water and provide crop irrigation.
Who knew, eh? You heard it here first. And finally, transport. This is another interesting one. Transport for London, or TfL, is planning to establish a series of solar farms to power the London Underground. The body has opened a bidding round for developers who will deliver proposals for developments of up to 64 megawatts, which would power about 5% of the tube network.
Might say my life is in a rut, I'm quite happy with what I got. People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can't see the fine things happening here today. A show of strength with your boys' brigade. I'm so happy and you're so kind. You want more money, of course I don't mind. To buy nuclear textbooks for atomic rhymes, and the public gets what the public wants. But I want nothing, society's got some. Some pleasure out to hate me, I've enough already on my plate. People might need some tension to relax me, I'm too busy dodging between the facts. You see, here's what you get. You've made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leaders and place your trust, as their lies will shut down and their promises rust. You'll see killing machines with paper rockets and guns, and the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give up, the society wants. I'm going underground. Let the boys all shout for tomorrow. La 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 la.
Oh, great track there by The Jam. Would you believe that's 1980? Ooh. Ouch. That's what, 44 years ago? Oh. And we played that going underground, of course. Transport for London, or TfL, is planning to establish a series of solar farms to power the London Underground. All interesting stuff. Wow. If you've just tuned in, of course, you're listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. On digital, if you're in South Yorkshire, sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning, 11 till 12. Next up, ask yourself a question. So, do you know how a fuse board works? Do you even know where your fuse board is? I saw this article and I thought, wow, this is good stuff. So, as you might expect, every property has a fuse board. And many people are scared to even open the cover flap and look at it, including me. Once you understand how it works, though, you will see that its primary purpose is to keep you safe. So how does it work? So the fuse board, despite its intimidating appearance, is really rather simple. It receives the main power to your home and it divides it into different areas, making it safer and easier to manage. Now, looking at the board, you will notice a large main switch in red. If you flick this switch, it will turn off all the power to your property, which is good to know should you ever need to turn everything off in an emergency. Now, when I read this article, I asked Paul, I said, you know, I know where our fuse box is, but I've never lifted the lid on it. So I went to try and open it, and I said, I can't open it. And you went, ah, you have to turn a screw or something, do you? He's not listening to me. Are you going to answer me?
Yes, you do. I'm looking for something.
Well, this is live radio, Paul. But yeah, so I couldn't do it. But it's worth checking with your household. Do you all know where your fuse box is? And do you know how to open the fuse box before you even get inside it? So that big red switch, they're saying the large main switch is in red. And if you flick that, it will turn off all the power to your property, which is a really good thing to know. Most of the other switches look the same and are called circuit breakers. And each of these switches is a circuit of power that might be labelled upstairs lights, downstairs lights, upstairs sockets, kitchen, etc. So have a look at your own box and understand what each bit is. Every part of your home that requires power will have an individually zoned and have a fuse switch that turns off the power in that area if it detects an issue. It can also be used to isolate an individual area should there be a fault or if you need to work in that area safely without losing power to the whole house. Now, if a circuit breaker trips, it could be the result of something simple like a blown light bulb. First, try flicking the switch back into the on position. If it stays on, then all is well. But if it turns off the circuit again, you must investigate further. And at that point, the article says it's really worth contacting a registered electrician, somebody who really knows what they're doing. Now, next to the circuit breakers, you may see a few larger switches called RCDs. This means residual current devices. And these are an extra level of safety, super sensitive and designed to trip the switch and turn off the power should there be an issue such as a mischievous pet chewing through a cable. In this instance, the power will automatically switch off within milliseconds, significantly reducing the risk of electrocution. So now that you realise your fuse board is packed with features to keep you safe, the article says, I guarantee it will be your new best friend. So top tips, do you know, number one, where your fuse board is, and do you all know how to use it? So that's your task for the rest of this weekend.
Smile.
Great track there by a band called Electric Six. Danger High Voltage, because we're talking about how does a fuse board work. Next up here on the Live Science Radio Show, Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, we're going to talk about Sheffield City Council's recycling and waste collections.
Yes, over 11 million bins were collected from homes across Sheffield in 2023. 99.9% of this waste was sent for recycling, composting or turned into energy. So, what should you go for in your bin?
What should you go in your bin?
Yes, we took this straight from the website.
We did anyway, yeah. So, what should go in your bin in Sheffield,
Not what should go your bin in Sheffield. That's what it got off the website. So, brown bin. Glass, cans, tins, plastic bottles, not plastic bags. Yes. Empty all bottles, rinse and replace tops where possible. Like now, Spencer's, all their milk cartons are all white, aren't they?
They are, but a lot of drinks bottles now, the lids, you cannot detach them. They're attached.
Yeah.
So and that's a modern thing, a modern change, because I don't think they can replace. They can. The tops are too small, I think they get lost.
So, they're always slightly attached. Labels can be left on. Tops and trigger sprays can be recycled. Pump dispensers cannot be recycled. Most of them tell you if they can because they have a metal spring inside. If it's got a metal spring, they can't recycle it unless you destroy it yourself. Squash your bottles and cans to create extra space.
But be careful if you're crushing cans. They might be sharp.
Yeah.
That's all I'm thinking. Next, what do you put in your blue bin?
Well, blue bin, you think, paper and cardboard. Flatten your cardboard to create extra space. Small amounts of extra paper and card will be taken. If you bundle it together, neatly tie with string and ensure the bundle is no bigger than your blue bin. Because we all get a lot of cardboard now, don't we, from Amazon?
Well, indeed, another place is home delivery, isn't it? Next up, green bins.
Yeah, one we haven't got. There is a charge for this, and this is for your garden waste. And that runs from March till November. And that's for home composting. Black bin, the big one, if you've got a big black bin. Household waste, not batteries, medicines or electrical equipment. Make sure your bin lid is closed. Do not leave any extra black bin waste as it will not be taken. There is a £33 charge for a replacement black bin.
Yeah, very interesting. So what happens to your waste in Sheffield then? And this has all come from the council's website. The paper and card in your blue bin and the glass cans and plastic bottles in your brown bin are taken to a materials recycling facility, sorted into different materials and then sent to be recycled into new products. The non-recyclable waste in your black bin is taken to the council's energy recovery facility, or ERF, where it is incinerated and turned into clean, sustainable energy for the national grid and also to heat more than 125 buildings across the city, including the workstation that Sheffield Live is based in. It also, I know for sure, heats the town hall in Sheffield as well. So in 2023, 28,000 tonnes of recycling and waste were also taken to the five household waste recycling centres in Sheffield. The council also has a bulky waste collection service which has a charge to it. You can check all this out on the council's website, www.sheffield.gov.uk. And all I would say finally is, wherever you can, please, please recycle. There's so many people still put things in the black bin that could easily be recycled.
I could be a driver, an articulated lorry. I could be a poet, I wouldn't need to worry. I could be the sergeant in a squadron full of wallers. I could be the son in a teaching full of scholars. What a waste! What a waste! What a waste! What a waste! I'm told to play the fool in a nine-piece band. First line girls, everyone I stand. I should be glad. What a waste, what a waste, rock a roll down. I could be a lawyer with stratagems and ruses. I could be a doctor with poultices and bruises. I could be a writer with a growing reputation. I could be the ticket man of full of all my strength. What a waste, what a waste, what a waste. What a waste. I chose to play the fool in a nine-piece band. First line girls, everyone wants to stand. I should be glad to be so inclined. What a waste, what a waste. What a roll down. Where's my whistle? Revolution. I could be an inmate in a long-term institution. I could lead to white extremes. I could draw or die. I could yawn and be withdrawn and watch them gallop by. What a waste. 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 I'm told to play the fool in a nine-piece band. First line nerves, everyone I stand. I should be glad to be so inclined. What a waste, what a waste, what a waste.
Brilliant track there. What a waste by Ian Jure. Live track as well. My, we played some good stuff today, haven't we? Played that to talk about Sheffield City Council's recycling and waste collections. Check it out on their website, sheffield.gov.uk. Just tuned in, of course, listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital at in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms. We've got our Ogo back. Dr. Ogo Osamo should be on the line.
Breathe in the air.
Good morning, Augusta. Are you there? Oh, good morning, Augo.
Is there?
It's good morning.
Good morning, Augo. So how are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
Very well. We've missed you, Augo.
I know. I've missed you guys too. I hope you had a good summer.
You've been having your feet up, haven't you, for the summer? No.
Kind of.
No, you haven't. You've been busy trying doing other to. Things. I know. So, Augo, for people who don't know who you are, we used to work together in the air quality team at Sheffield City Council many years ago now, and it's a fascinating subject, air quality, and that is your background, isn't it?
That is correct. By training, I'm a chemist, an applied chemist, so to speak,
Ooh.
In the sense that we try and look at how what happens in the laboratory probably is replicated outside.
Yes.
So, for example, when you burn tissue paper, for example, it produces smoke, or if you like, and you know, water vapor. Now, the problem is when you burn other things such as fuel, diesel, petrol, or even gas, i.e. methane, in enclosed environments, you also end up with byproducts. And in terms of air pollution and air quality, some of those byproducts are actually damaging to health. So diesel combustion leads to fine particulate production as well as nitrogen dioxide. And as we know, air pollution has been recognized to be so damaging to health that there are regulations to curb it, you know, to reduce them. In Sheffield, for example, we now have a clean air zone, which everybody who travels in Sheffield by road, or even when you walk, will see signs put up to try and encourage a reduction of air pollution emissions from road vehicles.
Yes, we worked together on that. That was quite a project, wasn't it?
We worked together on that for a good considerable time.
Yeah, but the interesting one is, it often doesn't get talked about as much, is particulate matter, and that means fine dust particles that get into your body. You breathe them in, they damage your lungs and your heart, and there's all sorts of research has been done on that, and you can probably talk about that as well, Augo. But we saw an article about a new study into the invisible dementia trigger in air pollution, and it's something that's been it's the Francis Crick Institutes and a charity called Race Against Dementia. They're starting to look into that as another impact of air pollution, which really, even when we were working together, they were maybe on just starting to think about the impact of air pollution on the brain.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, especially in terms of Sheffield, you remember the days when coal used to be used as a combustion fuel in industry as well as domestic
yes.
heating, you would see very dark smoke, you know, pumping out of chimneys and stuff. Now, because of improved technology, coal is no longer used to the same extent as it used to be used, because we're now using gas, you know, to produce heat. But the interesting thing about, and also oils as well, such as diesel and gas oil and so forth, have been used to generate energy. The interesting thing about the transformation or transforming from using coal to oil and then gas is that you're still producing some pollutants, but they're no longer visible.
Yes, this is it.
So we assume that there's no more, nothing to be concerned about in terms of products of combustion, which we used to be aware of when coal was being burned.
When you could see it, and I think that is it's a big problem, isn't it?
Exactly. Now, what you hardly see the emissions or the byproducts of these combustion. As you say, fine particulate matter is in fact one of the pollutants that's of serious concern. Their size is so small, they're airborne, they travel long distances, but we also inhale them, we breathe them in. And when we do, especially particulate matter of the size 2.5 micron, they're called PM 2.5 particles. They're so small that they can get through into our bloodstreams when we breathe, you know, air, because they're airborne. And these tiny toxic pollutants are considered to be driving, for example, brain inflammation and, you know, the damaging of neurons in our brains. We also know that these fine particles affect, you know, for example, people with asthma will know that when air pollution is not good, you know, it triggers, you know, the asthma attacks for some people. So these fine particles are really considered unhealthy for us. And the World Health Organization recognizes that indeed there's no safe level for these fine particles. So the group from, you know, University College London, as you say, based at the Francis Crick Institute, they are engaging in this cutting edge pioneering work where they're looking at the relationship between fine particles and dementia.
Yeah, it's quite a bit of research, isn't it?
It is.
And I picked up it's a charity, Race Against Dementia, but they've gone in. I think this is the first piece of research of this type and of this in depth, because they want to get to the bottom of it. And what I read all good, and I thought it was very interesting. I knew particulate matter, or this fine dust, could get into bloodstream, and I knew it could affect your heart and lungs, but I didn't really think about why did it do so. And it's because it's triggering an immune response. It's inflammation, isn't it? Your body's not happy with what's coming into its system. And I've never read that before, so I found that quite interesting.
Yeah, what the research is showing is that when brain cells, they have names for example, they're talking about microglia and astrocytes, they're brain cells. They usually help in maintaining healthy brain function. But when they become overstimulated by pollution, such as, you know, fine particulate matter, they then release inflammatory substances that harm surrounding neurons. Now, this damage could, as from their consideration, could be a key driver behind the cognitive decline seen in dementia. In other words, the brain function, people begin to lose brain function. And which is part of, you know, the symptoms when people suffer from dementia, or one of the symptoms anyway, that people experience when they suffer from dementia.
It's interesting. So it's, yeah, sorry, yeah. You've got long ago. No, I was going to say that.
I was going to say.
Oh, go on. Yes, you go. Sorry.
Yeah. No. It's an interesting, you know, recognition from their work. That in fact there's a relationship between, or there could be a relationship between the two, air pollution and, you know, brain function. And part of what they're trying to understand, especially at the molecular level, is how fine particulate matter specifically, you know, impacts and causes this effect. So they're moving, it's a step-by-step study that they're undertaking to try and understand how, when you inhale fine particulate matter, gets into your bloodstream and affects, you know, the neurons in your brain, you know, which causes reduced function of the brain.
Yeah, and it's a worrying thing, although, because whether we drive, we cycle, we walk, we're all exposed to air pollution at some point.
That is correct. Now, if you're active, that's the fun, interesting thing about air pollution and health. If you're an active person, you're cycling, you're walking, you're playing football, your body uses up, you know, if you like, oxygen quite a bit, you know, in doing that. But also it helps to get rid of these fine particles faster.
Does it? Oh, that's an interesting one.
You see, because if you're just sitting there not doing much, or you're sitting in an air polluting environment, you're likely to find that accumulation starts. But if you're busy sweating and burning energy and stuff, my understanding is that there's a reduction in the impact of air pollution on you.
Wow, that is an interesting one. I read another article about it. I think it was in the Times, and they just talked about how do PM particulate matter get into your system, and they're saying that they think it gets into your brain through the olfactory bulb around the massive tissue that sits above the nasal cavity. So you're breathing it in, and that bit of your nose is connected to how you smell.
That's correct.
Yeah, and the other thing I read as well was this research, they're not sure what the link is yet, but they think the particulate matter causes brain tissue to form clumps, which are possibly a hallmark of Alzheimer's and dementia, when we were at work, most of the research was about impact of air pollution on your lungs, like you said, asthma, and your heart. Yeah. But not so much the brain, you know.
Yes. Some research from, again, the same university, in University of London, the air pollution team or the air quality team there, they've demonstrated the presence of fine particulate matter on the lungs. Because they've done work where they looked at the tissue, the lung tissues, and they found very, very tiny, you know, particulate matter in the lungs. So the research has been ongoing for quite a while now. I think the difference this time is that these people are beginning to, through what experiments they did in the laboratory as well as with animals, they're beginning to see a connection between very fine particulate matter on the brain. They're beginning to see the nature of that connection in terms of how it may in fact be causing the release of inflammatory substances that actually harm neurons in the brain. So it is, and the team actually include some interesting scientists as well, you know, in terms of their specialist area. So, yes, it's a new area, and the research is progressing pretty rapidly, and they're hopeful that they will eventually, once they can understand how particulate matter triggers, or contributes to the triggering of dementia, then they might be able to begin to look at how solutions can be provided, you know, and stopping that trigger from taking place in the first place.
Yeah, it says the same team who were doing this study, they did a previous study published in Nature in 2023, yes, highlighting the link between pollution and lung cancer. Now that's why they're moving on to dementia, because we were talking off air ago, and dementia in our lifetime now is one of the biggest killers, maybe because we're living longer, but there's lots of reasons why people suffer from dementia.
Yes, there are other reasons as well why people suffer from dementia. The interesting bit here is that air pollution is now being identified as one of the, could be one of the reasons.
Yeah.
And especially if they can get to the bottom of this relationship, then you know, it would be, given that, you know, we all are exposed to air pollution as well, wherever we live.
Yeah, I know. I know. I remember when I started working with you, because air quality was not my background, Ogo, and you, you know, you've worked in that field for many, many years, and it never failed to amaze me how interesting a topic it was. And at the time, not very much talked about, very under the radar, you know. Carbon was all the big issue, climate change, but actually local air pollution at the point when I was got involved. Yes. You know, people found that hard to take, didn't they? We were talking about these things you couldn't see.
Exactly.
And now the research, some of the other research over the years has shown it's not just lung cancer, it's heart disease, diabetes possibly, low birth rates, loads of things that it's impacted on without us really knowing about it.
That's right. And again, those impacts, you know, are considered, some of them are considered correlative. In other words, if you have pollution, high levels of pollution in the air, you can see how some people suffer or show different, you know, signs of effect, you know, by the air pollution, by the level of pollution in the air. Whereas, one of the ones that at the time has not been properly understood or considered linked to this dementia bit of it. But yeah, in terms of birth, you know, pregnancy and so on, there are concerns about air pollution having a detrimental effect. Breathing, asthma, for example, that most people are familiar with. Heart attacks as well.
Yeah, I know. It's bad news.
Have also been linked to air pollution. So there's quite a bit of knowledge about those. But getting down to the, if you like, molecular level, you know, I was trying to get down to understanding how this, as you say, you cited the research in, you know, lung cancer. They're using a similar technique that was used there, you know, in trying to understand how dementia and air pollution are linked.
Yeah, it's a lot of research. Before you go, it's been a fascinating chat. Can I just ask you, what made you, because maybe I do know the answer to this, what made you get interested in air quality and air pollution? Obviously, you said you're a chemist by background, but what was it? Was it just happened to be a job that you saw, or was it something that interested you anyway?
It started with being a chemist. You know, you measure stuff, chemical compounds. It started from looking at how pollution from industry, or how much of it ends up in the environment. So when, you know, people surface treat metal materials, you know, it's coated and heated and polished and finished off, once their activity is carries on, they emit these fine dust particles that end up in the air. Now there are regulations, government regulations, to minimize the quantity that industries are allowed to emit into air, and they have to demonstrate that they're in fact keeping to the regulations. So I started off consulting for the council, for the industries, you know, as a council staff, measuring levels of pollution to air. And with that, it became clear that there are already existing policies anyway, before I got involved, to try and manage the levels of these pollutants in air, because there had already been a recognition that air pollution damages health at that point. If you think back, it was 2010.
It was.
The EU set a standard that should not be, you know, breached for PM10, for example. 2010, that's a long time ago.
It is. These things take time.
Yeah, it took active, if you like, people who are interested in improving environmental health, it took their activity, especially the legal firm in London.
Client Earth.
Yes. It's their legal, their action against the government that actually meant that led to a more serious attention being taken by government to make sure that air pollution is managed positively. You know? Otherwise, whilst people knew that there were issues, there wasn't sufficient, you know, implementation of existing policies, basically.
Yeah, it is a difficult one.
Yeah,
and I think just before I let you go, you've been amazing. Thank you very much for joining us. Before I go, and I would say that when I got involved, we only just started to realise the impacts of pollution from traffic, from road traffic. That was a game changer, wasn't it?
Yes, indeed. And also from the rail lines.
You know. Yeah, well, I know. Brilliant. I know. Fascinating chat, Ogo. Great to have you back. And thanks for joining us. And we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Ogo. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.